Mama Wax, few minutes past 2 p.m. My brother Jimmy Griffin's going to be here at 2:30. The Incurables are going to be playing at the Wildy, and Outdoor Monstero is coming up, which I've never been. Got to change that.
Oh, you've only done the winter.
I've only done the winter.
Huh.
Yeah. Never seen the big show.
You're an OG. You would have been out there.
No, I mean, I am an OG, but I've just never made it. There's always like vacation for the Glovers.
That's a good point.
Whatever.
Yeah. Vacation season, yeah.
I thought this was really interesting over my break. You guys know I'm an agnostic, and you know I'm also into near-death experiences, and I've always had a theory about them, which I've shared in the air, and I read an article by a neuroscientist, I guess, I forgot, but like a real guy, a doctor, and he gave his theory, which was pretty close to mine. And he said, after, you know, decades of researching these things from a medical clinical standpoint, he said, here's what I think is going on. And we didn't know this stuff even 5 years ago. Like 5 years ago, we learned that when a human dies, which is not as easy of a definition as you would think, you know, like dead used to be dead. But now we know that there's about a 30-second surge in the brain after clinical death that happens in the areas of the brain that are responsible for dreams and visualization, and that would explain why people have these experiences. But it goes off the chart. Like, our brain goes into a mode that we never experience during life, not on psilocybin, not on anything. That is unique in the human experience. And then for about 7 minutes, they think, the brain is active enough to play these images and for people to have these experiences, so that when they wake up from death, you know, like happens with NDEs, they can recount many times, this happened, this happened, this happened. It was more real. The colors were more vibrant. There were colors of flowers that don't exist. And he has put together that about 14% of people have negative experiences. They go to hell. They're lost in a dark void. They're separated from God. And it's just terrifying. But most people have a good one. And he believes that it's all physiological. Now, for those of you who are religious, you have your own beliefs. I get it. But clinically speaking, he thinks that the sum of your life, the sum of your experiences, the information that's in your brain, the trauma that you lived through, the losses that you had. Were you a positive person? Were you a negative person? Were you kind? Were you, taking advantage of everybody? That's what your brain has to work with. And so your heart stops beating. Your brain goes crazy for 30 seconds. It downloads all this information. You re-experience your life or parts of it, or you see people who have died before. That makes sense to me, that your brain goes crazy for whatever evolutionary reason. I'm not sure why, once your heart stops beating, why the brain cares anymore, but it's almost like a send-off. But another thing I thought of is, who knows what time feels like in that state? Because it seems from people coming back and saying, I saw these things, maybe that feels like an eternity to you. You know, it's 7 minutes from the outside world, but in your brain, who knows? Because people who come back from NDEs have said, oh, it had to be months that I was with Jesus, or I was this or that. Also, there are a lot more cultural aspects to it than we knew before. For example, most Christians view the famous white light as a being, whereas in Japan, they view it as an inanimate object, not a personage. I just thought all that was really interesting.
It is interesting to think about. And it kind of ties into the adage of, you are what you think. Like, if you are, I don't know, it's like you either are your thoughts or you're not your thoughts, but what you think about ultimately, like, creates your reality, right? If you're constantly thinking negatively and constantly thinking bad things are going to happen to you or people don't like you, a lot of times that can be a self-fulfilling prophecy and vice versa. And it kind of makes sense that if you're going through an experience like that, you're just drawing on the things that you've been generating for your entire life.
Yeah.
Sounds like a movie premise.
Yeah.
You could tell the whole movie during that time period and then the...
There was a chick comic. My favorite one was called This Was Your Life.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And basically, like, an angel guy dies, and the angel takes him up to, like, it looks like space. It doesn't seem like heaven.
Remember that?
And there's a big movie projector, and they show scenes from the guy's life.
Yeah.
I forgot about Robert Chick for a moment, and I thought that she was just referring to, like, a comic like a written by a woman.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow.
Is this a thing? I never heard of that.
A chick comic.
We've all read chick comics.
All right.
It's like lame. It's for chicks. No, the chick comics.
Yeah,
which I used to pass out at Alton Square.
Classics.
Tell people they're going to hell.
Classics.
Right outside Olga's Cafe.
Wait, the chick comics would tell you you're going to hell?
Yeah, they were little.
Oh,
we called them tracts.
Yeah, tracts.
And they were very catchy. You know, like the front of them was a guy like being melted in hell, and you know, it's like, hey, you're going to hell. Here's the only way to avoid it. Get on your knees, say this prayer. And Christians, fundamentalist Christians like I was, would hand them out, go door to door, hand them to people in Alton Square Mall. And very not Catholic.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, you guys are a little more laid back.
A little bit.
A little more chill.
A little bit.
Catholics are like, why don't you come over here for a fish
fry? It's so funny because I never...
Exactly. Have a beer.
Like, you're describing all those things. I never experienced any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not evangelical very much. You know, like...
No. There's an arm of the Catholic Church.
It's more like coming... Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're obviously...
Yeah.
It's a huge organization, and it's the oldest of all of them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there are branches that come off that tree. But just general day-to-day, that's just not the way it's done.
Yeah. Question. Mm-hmm. What are we doing apropos of bad things? Like, my mom and dad were products of their generation when it came to you know, racial things and a woman's place in the family, XYZ, that I now look back on and
chicks
go...
Chicks' place in the family.
Chicks' comics.
Chicks' comics. They got their own comics.
But I look back on that and go, wow, that's troublesome. What do you think our generation is doing that Rach, your grandkids, when they're grown, would go, my grandma Rach thought this. Anything come to mind?
Probably a ton of stuff. I don't know. Some of my takes are a little too piping hot here. I don't really want to deal with the...
Hit it. I'll back you up.
And she's like, I'll take the
bet
bucks.
You never felt safer.
Probably feel the same way.
I think a lot of things. I think sometimes with the whole, like, how you feel is the most important thing in the world. I think we as a society have leaned way too far into that.
Amen.
To the point where, like, society feels like it's breaking down at times because people place their own feelings above everything else.
Well, okay, you're on your own on that one. No, I'm kidding. No, I actually feel the exact same way. I had that thought like just the other day that, look, I'm very sympathetic to people who, you know, are struggling with those kind of issues or have issues like that. But unfortunately, I do also feel, and maybe this is just a product of, you know, the Midwestern way that like Rachel and I were raised, but like I agree that sometimes you just want to go like, look, you just got to do the thing, okay? You just got to be out in society and just, yeah. you got to be a grown-up. You got to, if you're feeling some kind of problems or whatever, you got to, like, smush it down a little bit while you're out in society, man.
Especially when it comes to anxiety, I have struggled with very intense anxiety in my life. The more I try to appease my anxiety or do what my anxiety wants, the more I feed my anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the more I avoid things that give me anxiety, the more I'm just living my life in fear and avoidance. And that's really not the way you want to live. The best thing to do is just accept that you are feeling these negative emotions and try to keep living your life anyway. And like try not to assign like some sort of moral like, oh, I shouldn't feel like this. No, you do feel like that. You can still keep going. And I feel like that's the kind of the key piece we miss. I feel like we've kind of landed on this thing where it's like, oh, no, you feel. Oh, well, if you feel, then the rest of us are just going to kind of work around that. I think ultimately that's kind of bad.
It's
unsustainable.
It's a great analogy. Like, you feed that dog, the dog's just going to come back tomorrow.
Yeah.
You're not getting rid of it by giving into it.
Wheels, anything come to mind?
I mean, I think we already see it with some Gen Z as they get older, the way they look at millennials and boomers too. But I think what you're talking about is maybe the alphas and even their kids. They're gonna look at us and think we were so mean compared to the younger generations. Like we are.
Like how? Example.
Just like aggression. Like we'll fight. You know, we'll argue about things. We'll be aggressive when, like, no, we're not doing it that way. We're doing it the way it needs to get done, as opposed to worrying about everybody's feelings and worrying, are you okay with this? We're more of this, like, I mean, I know it's not, nobody in every generation is the same. And we are less of this as Gen Xers than the boomers. And I'm sure the boomers are less of that than the previous generations were.
So do you think we're getting softer in a good way?
I don't know if it's softer or if it's just... Maybe that's the way you go. But I don't know that I would quantify any of it as good or bad. I just think it's different. Like you're gonna every generation has its own sensibility. And when we look at those previous generations, a lot of what we're seeing is just kind of meanness, right? Why are you racist? Well, it's a pretty mean thing to be. It's a pretty aggressive thing to be. It's not necessary. They're no threat to you. But you know, in our world, we're more of the. It's less about like. Putting people down or holding people down. And it's more of like, look, your problems are your problems. They're not my problems. I got stuff to do. You got stuff to do. Let's get our stuff done. Like, and I think that may be just an older generation thing over time. Like it's maybe always been that way. But I think that's what I hear as the most common criticisms from younger generations of boomers and Xers.
I also think here's my hot take. I think 99.9% of the things that are being posted on social media are going to be looked back on with so much just like,
yeah.
What were you doing?
Yep.
What was that? Like the things that get the most positive attention now, I think we're going to look back and go, what? What was that?
Yeah. I think you're right. I think in 50 years, whatever the media looks like should... Now, I don't know if they will, should look back on my time in the media from 2000 to, say, 2030 and go, what the hell were you even thinking you were doing? You did 24/7 nonsense coverage, siloed stations where Fox had a completely different story as CNN. Like, you guys were just sowing stress and division. I hope people grow up enough intellectually and politically and socially that my grandkids would look back and judge pretty harshly.
Yeah.
I think we deserve it.
I wonder if those future generations will also look at these generations, you know, the last two and then X and maybe even millennials, although I think millennials are less this, that we've for so many years now, we've been so focused on profit motive and that it trumps people. Right? 1,000 people need to lose their jobs. Whatever. We got to meet our bottom line. We got to please our stockholders. I wonder if those are the kinds of things that will be looked at as gross in 50, 60 years.
Yeah.
Where you're like, wait a minute, hold on. They prioritized money over human beings having what they needed. Because we are that. I mean, we are.
Yeah.
I feel like that's going to get way worse before it gets any better.
Oh, I think so in the short term. But I mean, I think that will... Because think about it. What usually ends up leading to those judgments of previous generations? It's when things go bad. Right? It's always after terrible things happen, then there's a bit of a reset, whatever that reset happens to be. Mm-hmm. And we had that in the early 20th century with a couple of wars and a Great Depression and all that. And then what followed was this great big... boom period where things were good and people got along, or at least, you know.
So
that's not entirely true.
I know
true.
This is just a thought experiment on a local radio show, but we're all assuming that we're going to evolve positively, be kinder, be smarter, be more gregarious. What if we just keep getting worse?
We have gotten better, though. It's better now than it used to be.
Some things are better.
Well, most things are, in terms of how human beings are treated. I mean, if you're in any marginalized population,
I agree.
50 years ago was objectively worse than now.
But the political state right now, to me, is worse than any time in my life. The state of media is worse than any time in my life.
And those are the kinds of things I'm talking about. Like, there will probably end up being, at some point, a huge crisis that emerges from all of this, whether it's a financial crash, a big war, whatever it happens to be, that there will be something that serves as somewhat of a reset.
Yeah.
I also don't necessarily agree that it's objectively better right now for, you know, every community. I mean, I think you look at like things like, ICE taking over American cities, and you look at, you know, the rampant transphobia that is leaking into all parts of like our actual ruling government right now. I don't know if that's necessarily
50 years ago. If you were a trans person, you were a joke. People were making fun of you, that you were an outcast completely. At least now there are spaces for them, and there are lots of people that are accepting and okay with it. 50 years ago, nobody was.
Yeah, there's also a lot more people that are like actively wishing them dead and harm.
But keep in mind, like 50 years ago,
some of them are ruling the government.
50,
you're not wrong. I mean, I'm just...
Because, 50 years ago, if you're a woman, you don't have nearly the rights that you have now.
I don't think we've made the progress you think we have, is what I'm saying.
I think the progress is clear. I don't think it's where it should be. I think it's definitely forward, though. How many women had positions in federal government 50 years ago, in the 1970s?
Neither one of us know the answer to that.
Right, almost none. Almost none. The answer is almost none. You can look it up. How many women have positions of power as executives in Fortune 500 companies now compared to then?
Neither of us know the answer.
We prefer the term chicks.
He's really cringe. If you weren't a sex surrogate, I swear to God, you wouldn't be on this show. We have Jimmy Griffin in studio after the bottom of the hour break. This is pretty important, though. I've been seeing videos lately. I don't know if you've been seeing them, of vanilla cones, ice cream cones, being dipped into melted butter and then sprinkled with sea salt. And that's evidently the new rage. You ever had that thought in your head before?
You dip what into sea salt?
You take a cone, ice cream cone, and instead of dipping it like in chocolate or caramel, you dip it into melted butter, like lobster. And then you immediately sprinkle sea salt on that. So it's buttery and salty like popcorn, but on ice cream.
But doesn't that melt the ice cream?
It doesn't in the videos.
How?
Magic.
Is it soft serve or is it like hard?
Soft.
Like, oh, okay. Because I feel like that would just be like melted. I mean, you put hot fudge on them, but hot fudge melts it.
I would be willing to try it. It doesn't necessarily make me go like, ooh, yes, but I bet it is pretty good. You ever ponder that yourself, Dave?
Never had that thought.
Does it sound good to you?
I mean, I like all those ingredients.
I say it's got to be good. There's no way it's not.
And how do we miss it?
What do you mean?
Like, for 300,000 years.
Oh.
Just now? They're like, what if we put butter on that ice cream?
What a time to be alive.
No kidding.
Hey, baby, if you're feeling down, I know what's good for you all day.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. In studios, my brother Jimmy Griffin.
Hello.
Good to see you, pal.
Always
good to see you.
Always.
We just took a pic standing here, you know, by my desk, and I was saying, like, we've probably taken about 100 of those over the years.
Right.
You could make a cartoon of us just, you know, it's me getting shorter and older and you getting more handsome. You were just telling us that you did a promotional video for Elmon and you were roller skating. I didn't peg you as a roller skater.
We're doing more fun stuff. Rocket. It's like, and Elisa and Vivian like to roller skate. So it's one of the, I forgot. Dude, when I was a kid, that was like the highlight of the year was the my Catholic school roller skating party.
That's
was
awesome.
Like Studio 54, you know.
That's great.
And So yeah, I used to roller skate when I was a kid, and there was a Godfather's Pizza next door, and you'd like meet a girl and go roller skating and then go over to Godfather's Pizza and try to make out with them.
Dude, while you were doing that, I was like hiding from my parents in the bathroom after having watched The Love Boat. Like I had no play whatsoever.
Dude, do you remember The Love Boat one where Sonny Bono was like a rock guy?
Sure do.
Yeah.
Sure do.
Was it smash it, hit it with a hammer and trash it? That was like the song he did.
First of all those riders in our childhood were stoned out of their mind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And you know that some guy just goes, dude, what if we just had like the Lander sisters, but they're billionaireses, and they're like, run it.
You got it, buddy.
Let's go.
Have you ever seen Permanent Midnight?
Yes, time ago.
Yes, yeah. That was the guy that wrote Alf, was a total junkie.
Total.
And he would come up with these scenarios. And they would be like, yeah, that's great, you know.
Let's do it. And super successful.
Yes.
Well, like H.R. Puff and stuff, all of those, Sid and Marty Croft, I mean, it's well documented, they were stoned all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jimmy the Magic Flute.
That's what I grew up on.
Yeah, same. You
know? Yeah.
That and like early anime like Speed Racer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, where people talked really fast and you just, you know, like, oh, I guess this is the way it is in Japan, so...
Chim-chim, get to the car. Dude, I have a vivid memory of losing my first front tooth watching Speed Racer, sitting in the kitchen. We had a TV in the kitchen, and like my tooth like flying across the room watching Speed Racer.
Yeah. I thought, because the whole thing was weird, but I thought that Speed and Trixie were brother and sister, yet still in a romantic relationship.
Okay.
And I'm like 8, and I'm like, okay, that's the way you roll. Like, you got a monkey, so that's fine.
It's an edgy show.
It was an edgy show.
And was he their dad? The
Who knows?
Or the uncle? Or,
yeah, yeah, like the main big mechanic guy.
Yeah, Speed, get over here. Yeah. That guy, yeah.
I remember Johnny Quest and Race Bannon, coolest white man of all time.
Yeah.
And he had a girlfriend named Jade, this Asian woman, because of course she's named Jade.
Right.
And at one point, she's trying to kiss him, and he just kind of takes her by the face and throws her down. Right. And you're like, okay, I guess that's the way you do that then. Right. Like, it's amazing that any of us grew up with any sense at all.
Yes, yes. Well, we had to find other stuff. Like, that wasn't the be-all and end-all. Like, you didn't have a phone to like have that beamed into your head. You had to go, you know, to sit down at 3 o'clock or whenever it was on. And I try to explain that to Rocket. Like, I couldn't just watch whatever I wanted to watch when I wanted to watch it.
Yeah.
You had to be there and do it.
Phoebe was probably 6 before she saw her first commercial because everything was on screen.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember being like, what the hell is this? Like, what do you, I got to sit through 3 minutes of a guy selling me windows?
Yeah.
And
yeah, dude, our power went out this weekend, and I had to explain, the power came back on, but the internet did not.
It's a lonely time.
Right.
Man.
And I had to, like, explain to Rocket that nothing worked, and we had a box of DVDs, and we have a PS4 that's hooked up to the TV, and I was like, here's some DVDs, you can put them in your PS4, and we can, you know, so...
That's movie funny. Time, yep.
That's really funny.
Yes.
Got a couple shows coming up?
Yes, I do.
Talk about them.
The 18th is El Monstero at the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater, as I like to call it, Riverport. And that's with Night Ranger. That's going to be a fun one.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty damn cool. Yeah,
it is. It is. I loved Night Ranger when I was a kid.
Who didn't?
Yeah, yeah.
I saw them about 10 years ago out at the amphitheater, and I had just seen Pat Benatar, and I was very disappointed. Maybe she's had a bad night, but she kind of mailed it in. I think they played together, actually, and Ranger just killed it.
Yeah, yeah.
They sounded...
They totally... Dude, I got a really quick story. I'll do this as fast as I can, but this has got to be...
No, you're on until 3. Just
okay.
Take your time.
This is like 15 years ago. I'm at the pageant seeing Devotchka. Devotchka is a band that did the soundtrack. Have you ever seen Little Miss Sunshine?
Yes.
Okay. So they're kind of like, I don't want to say like Russian folk music, but it's kind of, you know, it's different, you know, and it's poppy and it's fun. And so I'm at the show. And Night Ranger was playing at Rib Fest like the next day. And I think they got into town and they said, take us to the big rock bar. That's where we, because then, you know, people know us at the rock bar. So they get there and it's Brad Gillis And somebody pointed me out. I was in the Halo, and they go, "That's Jimmy. He's a guitar player. He plays here all the time." And so Brad Gillis, like, comes over, and he's like, "Hey, man, how you doing? Blah, blah, blah. I'm Brad Gillis." I'm like, "Oh, hey." So we go in. I was like, I was just going back in to watch a show. And he's like, "Oh, okay, cool." And we go in, and we're watching Dvojka for, like, one or two songs. And he, like, taps me on the shoulder. He goes, "Dude, what's going on here?" And I was like, "No." I go, "It's this band." Yeah. And he goes, "This sucks." Like, he hated it. He was like, "Why are all these people here?" You know, and he's doing Rib Fest the next day. And I'm like,
"That's awesome."
I'm like, this is great. And he goes, "Where's the guitar solos?" I'm like, "They don't have guitars. It's not that kind of band." You know,
my Brad Gillis story is one of my first girlfriends.
I wasn't done.
Oh, I apologize.
So anyway, we get done, and he was like, "Hey, man, where are you going now?" And I was like, this is when I lived in Tower Grove. I was like, "I'm going to Manja. It's open till 2:30. He's like, "Could you take us over there?" And I was like, "Sure." So him and Joel Hoekstra, who is like the guy that took Jeff Watson's place, jumped in the back of my Geo Metro, and I drove him over to Manja at 2:00 in the morning. And yeah, there you go.
I had a girlfriend break up with me who I thought I would be with the rest of my life. And she breaks up with me. That's bad enough. Mm. And her parting shot. And strangely, I don't think she was trying to be mean. I think she was trying to purge her soul.
Okay.
She told me that she, while we were dating, had hooked up with Brad Gillis.
Oh my gosh.
From Night Ranger. And I loved Night Ranger. And I was so torn. I was sort of impressed and heartbroken all at the same time. And then fast forward, probably 2004. All the guys were on my show back in 97.1.
Did you tell him?
No. Oh. I didn't have that kind of balls. No, I didn't know. I was afraid of Brad Gillis. I still am. Don't tell him. But Pigpen, who was my associate producer, came busting in, and Jack Blades was playing like a 1935 Martin, and he cracked it.
Ooh.
Cracked it.
Oh.
And he was so cool. He was like, "It's an old guitar. It's fine."
Oh,
and
man.
Then they invited me to Subway sandwiches with him.
Nice.
Right? Nice guys.
Yeah.
Really nice guys.
Yeah, he was cool.
How good is Brad?
Oh, he's great. I was more of a, the Jeff Watson was my favorite.
He was cool.
Yeah. I mean, just his note choice and his ability was always impressive to me. And Brad's great too, you know, but, and like I watched Brad on the Speak of the Devil when he was with Ozzy.
Yeah.
Like, he was going back and forth between Ozzy and Night Ranger. So
was he the first in after Randy Rhoads?
The first guy's name was Bernie Torme, who was a British dude who did like three gigs while Brad was backstage learning all the songs.
Wow.
And Bernie Torme was not as, and dude, no, this is like before you had YouTube where somebody goes, "Here's how you do this."
Right.
And so Bernie Torme just kind of like jumped out there and went, beedle, 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 you know, as fast as he could. And they had Brad Gillis and George Lynch was also on tour with them. Like, and they would watch the show, and then during the day, Brad would rehearse and Bernie Torme would do the gig. And then after Bernie went back to England and Brad Gillis was out there.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So Night Ranger opening up for El Mancero.
Yes.
The 18th.
Yes.
Tickets. How do you?
I have no idea.
Oh, people can figure it out. It's 2026.
Yeah. You got a phone, right?
And then I think the only one of your projects that I haven't seen is The Incurables.
Okay.
And as you know, it's one of my favorite CDs.
Mm-hmm.
The one.
Wait till you hear the new one, man. I'm thinking it's going to be out in October. You know Mike Zito, right?
I do.
Yeah. Mike has a company called Broken Rocks. And they're helping me get it finished. It's being mixed right now by a guy named John Porter, who did like The Smiths and Roxy Music and like all kinds of stuff. But man, I'm super, super excited about this record. And I can't wait to get it out. It's
going
to be
cool.
Really good. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, when I first heard it, I didn't know you as well as I know you now. And I didn't know your musical tastes and such. But now that I know you so well, and I listen to that first CD, it's like, yeah, mm-hmm. all that funneled down into this.
Yes, yeah.
You hear the Petty, you hear the Beatles, you hear all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this one is, I didn't, after I had Rocket, I didn't write a song for a long time. Like, I was just, I was a stay-at-home dad. Yeah. I was, there weren't, and the world was not a place where that I was able to write songs about at that point. And then it all just started coming back. And so now, I also wanted to write a slightly happier record, because the first two records can get, are all, like, people that I knew would be like, man, I know you and you're like a fun guy and these songs are all sad. Like, why do you write all these sad songs? And I was like, I should try it. So it's a little more upbeat. It's that guy that wrote the first two records, but as a grown up and a more grown up.
I love it.
And a dad. Yeah. It's really cool. I'm super happy about it. And that's at the Wildy Theater on the 31st of July.
One of my favorite rooms.
If you want to go, let me know. I think Rocket is going to guest with us. He's really mad that he didn't get to do this. I told him, because I was coming from somewhere else. And I said, honey, I got to go. I'm going to be on Dave's show. And he goes, well, am I going? And I was like, no, I don't think you make this one. Oh, okay. Well, tell him I said hi. And I was like, all right.
We love Rocket.
But I think he's going to sing Hey Jude with us.
Get out.
At that
cool.
show. Yeah, yeah. That's
cool.
His favorite Beatles song.
You can get tickets to see Jimmy at Live Nation or Ticketmaster. And then our friend Julie Lally put a link to the El Monstero shows on the Facebook live stream. So check it out.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Jimmy Griffin is in with us. Elmon Outdoors is going to be the 18th. And then Jimmy's band, The Incurables, original band, is going to be at the Wildy 20th.
On the 31st.
31st.
Yes.
Your birthday, right, Rach?
Mine's the 30th.
It's the day after her birthday.
That's a Friday night.
Yeah. Be a good time. It's a little difficult because everybody's seated, you know, so it's kind of like
different vibe.
Right. But I've kind of tailored the gig so that it's, and we do it with the Petty thing too when we play there, is we're not as rock and roll. Not as in your face, not loud maybe.
Yeah.
You know, little
I
little
saw, I saw your last Petty at the Wildy. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I mean just everything.
Yeah.
Like the vibe, the music, the sound, it sounded so great.
Yes.
Yeah. There is a time traveler. Are you hip to this, Wheels?
I don't know. There's multiple time travelers if you follow the internet.
He's the new big one.
Okay.
And he is from 3700 when we have a huge battle with robots and they kill a third of humanity.
So somebody's redoing Terminator.
Kind of.
Oh, really?
But he brought back...
Is his name Jim Cameron?
he brought back the arm of one of the cyborgs, and he's showing that like online. But when I heard that, like, first of all, we're going to make it to 3,700. That's okay.
Yeah, that's a good sign.
And the robots only kill a third of us? Okay, I'll take those odds.
Yeah.
Like, if you came back to warn us, it sounds like good news to me.
The lines will be shorter for everything.
Right. Six Flags is easy.
Right.
You guys think we make it to 3,700 in any recognizable way as humans?
Yeah. I mean, we've been around longer than that.
Yeah, I think we'll find our way off this planet at some point.
Yeah, by then, I would think, right?
Yeah.
I think about, just think about 100 years. 100 years ago, what we could do then and what we can do now. And now, fast forward 1,500 years.
Yeah.
With quantum computing and AI help and, you know, just a better understanding of everything.
Yeah.
I got to believe that I don't know if we'll be like, quote unquote, colonizing, but I bet we're out there.
Yeah. That and genetically engineering ourselves.
Well, yeah, I was going to say,
that's going to be another thing.
At least the rich people will get to do that.
Right. Oh, did you see the guy who's been using his 17-year-old son's blood?
Brian Johnson.
Stop doing it.
Because he has an incurable disease that's going to kill him.
Oh, I didn't know that. I just knew he stopped doing it because it wasn't working.
No, he just announced it this week that he has some sort of a condition that his stomach eats itself, and it's incurable. And
he does, or his son does?
He does. Okay. The guy who's like your age.
Wait, when you say Brian Johnson, are we talking about the lead singer of AC/DC?
No. Oh, no. Be, I'll tell you what, though, that guy's going to live forever.
That's so true.
Yes. All those guys.
Their front of house guy, the last time they were here, they talked about how loud that band is, and they're like, you know, usually a mixed position is the dead center of the room. They're in an arena. Their soundboard is to the left of the thing to get out of the way of Angus's amps.
That's crazy.
Because he's that loud in an arena. And then they have, I think he said it was 60,000 watts of PA that is their monitors that are like aimed at their skulls, and it's all snare drum and his voice and the hi-hat.
Wow.
And that's all that's in the thing.
That's crazy.
And just to go, damn it,
Craig on the stream says, Jimmy is exactly how I imagined him. He looks like a rocker to the core. When people, because they know that Jimmy and I are boys, and they'll ask me, what is he really like, though, off stage? I'm like, dude, he goes to Target dressed exactly the same way.
Dude, can I tell you a story real fast?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm at AutoZone, and I look like I look, and I forget that people can see us now. But anyway, the guy goes, hey, man, I bet you like rock. And I was like, yeah, that rock is great. And he goes, man, you remind me of Earl Smith. I was like, I don't know who that. And I'm thinking Earl Slick that like played in Bowie's band. I'm like, are you talking about Earl Slick? And he goes, no, man, Earl Smith. I was like, dude, I don't know who that is. And he goes, man, he had that song. And I was like, what was the song? And he goes, man, he had that song with Run DMC. And I was like, are you talking about Aerosmith? And he goes, yeah, man, that guy, Earl Smith. And I was like, no.
I am not Earl Smith.
You're a long way off. All right, so make it out to El Monstero Outdoor and to the Incurables. I'm really going to try to make both. I've never seen the outdoor show.
Dude, we'll hook you up. You know that.
Okay.
Like, you won't have to be with the common people.
Meaning I get to sing Have a Cigar.
Yes.
Excellent.
There you go.
Excellent.
All right.
Tell you guys, thank you, Jim.